Welcome to Tech Theater Clubhouse Conversations, where we have conversations around conversations about the conversations we just had on the Clubhouse app.
This is a podcast.
Ew.
To continue that conversation that we were just having, because every Tuesday on Clubhouse, we have amazing discussions with really, really cool people that sit at the intersection of tech and theater.
The Clubhouse talk's only an hour long, so we always walk away from those talks with so many thoughts we didn't get to, or that maybe just occurred to us afterwards. So we decided to share those and reach even more of our friends and collaborators. Hey, I'm Jess, CEO and co-founder of Broadway Unlocked. My background is the theater side. I love connecting it to technology and the internet and all of that good stuff.
And I'm Joe, co-founder of Broadway Unlocked. I've been building and operating startups for over 10 years now, so I try to bring a tech and media perspective to these conversations.
And so with that, welcome to Tech Theater. This week on Clubhouse, we talked about a lot of really cool stuff. But first, I want to acknowledge, because we are recording this for the first time, this is chaos in here. It's just chaos. If you're looking, if you're looking at these cameras, we are, we had a 24-hour play festival across Sunday and Monday yesterday. We have Paul Taylor on Thursday night, which if you can look closely in one of these cameras, you probably can see it rendering right now on our other monitor. And we have the NYCLU gala next Monday. So it's just chaos in here.
Totally bonkers. A classic Jess term that Jess has shied away from, I feel like, recently.
Bonkers?
Bonkers.
Oh, yeah.
I love that word.
Probably because you pointed it. I had no idea I said it a lot.
Oh, I love that you say it. It's like a very Jess term. It captures so much sentiment. I hope you'll bring it back.
Done and done. Okay, so now that we've acknowledged that our office is actually much more in order usually than this, but not this week, friends. This week on Clubhouse, we talked about the unfortunate pandemic trend of theater workers not just changing jobs, but leaving the industry entirely, which is sad. And we talked a little bit about the future of the industry and how it may look different. But because of that, it's another opportunity to assess how we can improve and, you know, make these jobs more hospitable. We also talked about AMC Theater's announcement, which I think is a couple weeks old now, but still super exciting. We hadn't gotten to it. They're providing on-screen captions at hundreds of their theaters for multiple screenings every week. This is huge for accessibility. I'm so excited. This feels like one of those great things that happened as a result of the pandemic that should have happened a long time ago, but whatever, we're getting there. Huzzah. Mm-hmm.
Huzzah, we made it.
Okay, so because we were rendering Paul Taylor, I got to this conversation late, so I think you have to drive this bus entirely today.
Drive it right off the cliff?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Crash.
Exactly.
Well, let's start at the beginning, with the beginning.
A very good place to start.
The whole big chunk of the show that you unfortunately were not able to be part of, because yet again, Jermaine and Lucy, like co-hosting Clubhouse, is just the
Nailing
best.
It.
Just like they crush it. Jermaine can talk forever and like it never gets boring.
No,
if I talk for more than like 30 seconds, it's like, okay, we've all lost the thread.
That's not
He's
true.
He's off in some mysterious land.
Oh, please. Not at all.
Thanks. I was just fishing for compliments. That's all that was happening there.
Well, you did a really good job.
So I think you did like more than enough job of summarizing what the article is. No, genuinely. And I want to go somewhere.
More than enough job. What a fucking backhanded compliment.
I was acknowledging the fact that you were there for that part
but
of that
yeah,
conversation.
But yeah, with your delivery, I wish you guys could have, or you all could have seen him, because he literally was like.
They can.
Oh yeah, you can. That's right. Go to YouTube if you want to see this. Because you know how like a normal kind human would be like, you did a good job. And he was giving you full comedy bit where he was like, you did a more than enough job on that.
I know you're going to try to defend myself on this one. I got you lunch today, so.
Thank you.
We're now even. I just netted myself out.
Okay, great.
So, I mean, I love when on this show, we kind of talk at different altitudes. We'll be like deep down in the weeds in a technology and or theater related thing, or we'll float up to, you know, 30,000 foot and just talk about how capitalism is destroying everything. And this conversation had a lot of that energy of like flowing between those two altitudes. And I really enjoyed it because there is the specific lens of like, oh, like theater workers are not only switching jobs, but like getting the hell out of the industry. Mm-hmm. And we talked a bit about that, but we had a couple of interesting people on the show that were able to bring in other perspectives from other areas of the economy, you know, mine being sort of the tech startup world and the parallels there. And then Katie Braverman came up on stage and was chatting a bit about her experience in the healthcare industry.
I was wondering what she did.
Yeah. And She recently left the healthcare industry is what we learned today on Clubhouse.
Oh.
Go Katie. You sounded like it was a good thing. So I'm going to say yeah. and has been a longtime theater fan. But just the parallels across those three industries and how similar the story is in each of those and sort of the connection that we were able to make. And it felt like the purpose of that Clubhouse show is to do exactly that, like to use, you know, theater or technology as a starting point and connected to all these other cool, interesting places, which is so cool and so fun. And one of those like connective pieces that I'd love to hear your thoughts on was this sort of archetype for who is or what is a successful startup entrepreneur or a successful, you know, theater actor or a successful doctor or medical professional, and sort of like, what is the totem that is held up? And is that person, that story, that mythical being even possible to achieve? And so we've talked about it in the past in like the startup entrepreneurial world. It's like the you know, the super smart Ivy League dropout who has something else to fall back on and can therefore devote all of their time and energy to making no money while they start their company, whether it be that they have generational wealth or some other way of not having to pay for rent and being able to feed themselves,
right?
Whatever. No family yet, no other sort of dependents or anything like that. And how that's just like a totally unattainable archetype for so many people in the space, and how there were similarities sort of in the theater world of like, oh, like, do you need to just throw everything else on the back burner in order to achieve success inside of the theatrical world? And, you know, similar in the medical field, like, do you need to go to school for 7 years? Yeah. And then do you need to grind your way through like 3 more years of, I don't remember what the sequencing is becoming a doctor, right? But it's like internships, fellowships.
Your residency. Yes. Yeah, yeah, totally.
And it's just like forever and ever of making no money.
Right.
And at least at the end of the day, they're a doctor.
Right. They can pay back those bills.
Yeah. And like helping the world. But it was interesting sort of the parallels between those and the sort of the mythical entity that is the successful entrepreneur, the successful theater star, the successful doctor, that like not everyone has the luxury to aspire to, because it is like kind of an untenable situation that archetype is in.
Do you think my brain went to just like, oh, there are some parallels between healthcare, in particular startup world, and theater, in that the hours and the expectations are insane? But then my second thought that led to, do you think, is like, maybe that's really true of everything. Like, there's not a 9-to-5 anymore, right?
I think it is like slowly more true of everything. I was listening to a podcast about supply chain and how we operate in a world of like just in time sort of delivery, just in time supply chains, just in time. We talk about this in terms of like our production process. It's like you get the information right when you need it, so you're not overwhelmed beforehand. And like the supply chain, like sort of warehouse storage world, it's like I don't need to hold a bunch of inventory and pay for it to be stored somewhere. I just get it when I need it, and I'm just constantly swapping it out. But how like tenuous that is. Tenuous is the word of the podcast.
I love that word. It's a great word already.
But just how tenuous the supply chain was, and how the pandemic threw it all out of whack, and now like there's no warehouse space anywhere.
Right.
And like warehouse prices are going up and up and up. It's the only industry across the pandemic for some, you know, period of time that was like absolutely, utterly, insanely booming. and just like all of these things that worked when things were moving fluidly or, you know, smoothly. But the second a earth-shattering, globe-changing pandemic came into play, it just like broke it all. And like we're living through the aftermath of that. Have we set up all of our professions and just the way that our economy works, the way that our world works, the way that our expectations are set around like hyper-optimization and maximization, that like we leave ourselves no space, no wiggle room, no sort of other use cases except for like that really finely tuned perfection. And then like, okay, we live in the real world and things don't always go that way. Whether it be on an individual level where it's my car breaks down and I have to, you know, change professions, get a different job, do something that throws me off my track. Or if it's the global use case of like, we just don't have enough chassis to put shipping containers on to drive them across the country to put toys in the stores on the East Coast.
When you said chassis, I just imagined a very fancy bow tie for some reason. Like, I don't have enough chassis for my black tie event. I don't know what a chassis is.
Chassis is like a...
You just threw that out like everybody on a theater podcast can know what a chassis is.
That is a good note. Well taken. A chassis is like basically like a steel frame with wheels on it. It's what the tractor trailer hooks up to that carries the shipping container that comes off the ship onto the truck bed, the chassis, and then it's driven across the country to stores.
A, why the fuck do you know that?
Why don't you know that?
B, I like my version better.
Okay. Fancy
Someone bring me my chassis. I also imagine like a sitcom, like a 60s sitcom that's like, she's chassis, she's chassis, I'm chassis.
It sounded a lot like your 5-star song that everyone was hearing at the end of the show.
So it's different every week. I don't know if you talked about this, but like where my head goes, I was starting to think through like institutionally all the things that, you know, are being rightfully probably called out right now about theater in particular and what's so taxing about it. Just a short list of those things that we've talked about a lot of them on this podcast and in Clubhouse, being like, you really, like, you don't get to do funerals or weddings or holidays, right? If you're doing a show, the hours are obviously incredibly long and we're sort of going through a reckoning on that right now. And it's just an expectation. Like that happens every time. You always do 10 out of 12s, right? When you're doing a show and you do two of them at least if you're on an equity
production. What's a 10 out of 12?
10 hours out of 12 hours. So you tech for 10 out of 12 hours. You have an hour for lunch, hour for dinner.
Oh my goodness. What a day. That so it's like, really hard.
Yeah, it's super hard. It takes fucking forever. It's really long. And it's like usually right before you do dress rehearsals and then go into like the performances of your show. So time, obviously just like the lack of, you know, personal time off is pretty singular in our world. You just like can't go do that stuff. Another major one that I would think of right off the top of my head, obviously, is just like the lack of money you actually make. So like, unless you're the top 2% of theater workers, which means you're in commercial theater or touring theater. So let's just keep those three, you know, as like big totems. The trade-off has always been, as I know we've talked about, right? But I do what I love, which is true. Right. And you cannot like undervalue the idea that most people don't get to do what they love, you know? Mm-hmm. But what the pandemic did and the reason for this, you know, I think the impetus for this exodus is that it was always really easy for us to say, I don't want to do what I don't love. Like, absolutely not. I can't do that. I have to do what I love. But then everybody got forced into a year and a half, right, where they had to not do what they loved. And I think for a lot of people, like a big segment of people, they were like, oh, yeah, I could probably live with that, you know?
Yes.
But there's something about the romanticism of like that story that is true, still true for a lot of people, right? For me, I don't want to do anything but tell stories, make theater, make, you know, live digital stuff, the stuff that we do. But for a big swath of people, once they got forced into trying it, you know, it was like, oh yeah, fuck this noise. And I imagine that's one of the things that's also true across like healthcare and maybe not startups, because there was so much money coming into startups this year.
Yeah, I could see like further down the org sheet, people being like, fuck startups.
Yeah, totally.
You know, the founder's mentality idea, but that's the idea that anyone, any early employee at a startup should act and behave like the founder, i.e. throwing all your time, energy, anything and everything at the company for the success of the company.
Mm.
But the founders reap all the, you know, stock-based rewards inside of the success of the company, whereas those early employees don't get as much and don't have as much at stake. And I think maybe it was Gary Vee talking about this, like, you know, not expecting those people to act and behave the same way as he does as the namesake and the founder of his organization.
Right.
So yeah, I could see it in startup too, I guess is what I'm going to, of people being like, I was promised cool, interesting, change the world, and instead I hate my life.
And I'm just hanging on for hopefully like a $50,000 payday in 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Congrats.
We made it. So yeah, it feels like the great bargain, you know, the American dream in the corporate world, doesn't really exist anymore. Didn't ever come to fruition, right? That idea of like, work hard and you'll be successful, or do this and you'll be successful, do that and you'll be successful, follow your dreams and you'll have a good life, whatever it was. Yeah. Like, the story has changed by little bits across different generations, right? It went from work hard to follow your dreams. Now it's back to like, I don't know, some hedonistic, like, fuck everything and defend yourself. that's probably unfair.
That's funny.
I feel like if anything, Gen Z is going to be nicer and do better. I don't really have anything
no
to support
pressure,
that.
No pressure, Gen Z.
I'm just thinking about like Greta Thunberg.
That's the totem for all Gen Z.
Yeah. It's not a bad
deal. No, yeah. I would be into that.
But yeah, at somewhere along the way, it feels like the rug was pulled out a bit. And like, I don't know who pulled the rug, what rug was pulled, who made up this myth, like, right? There's no one person to look at and yell at or blame, but I just want someone to blame.
That's natural.
Make everything so much easier.
Yeah, totally. I came in the middle, came into Clubhouse in the middle of Anand talking about like being the youngest producing partner on a show and how the believing that the younger generation was going to drive the change. And then I think the conversation was around like feeling comfortable enough to speak up inside a traditional producing structure as the youngest person who's coming up in a world that's just different. And this is so uncontextualized because I missed a lot of that conversation, but I definitely found myself thinking, when he was saying that like, and this is a very just like, I just don't believe you can change systems, so go around them kind of thing. So I want to preface that because that's a very me way to look at things. That I don't think it's the young people end full stop. It's new models, young people finding new models that create the space to work differently. You know what I mean? That it's just never going to be one young person, one like Anand as the youngest person on a producing team is that drop of water on a fucking rock. And I'm not saying it doesn't change things, right? But it's so motherfucking slow. Mm-hmm. And I have no patience for that. So like when I think about that, it's like fine, produce on shows that have a traditional production model and speak up. That's great. But also like there's other ways to make money in 2021 through musicals and theater, like that are not being leveraged and explored. Mm-hmm. And company, all of us are the exact people to do that and to build teams that are all bought in on these new ways of working together.
Yeah. I feel like too, in Anand's case, like not to mention that he's probably going to be banging his head against that rock, mixing and trying to go back to your metaphor right now.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Like, it's like at the sacrifice of and the exceptionally hard work for very little progress of all of these young people inside of those systems and situations. And like, it's not fair to ask that of them. And like, good on and on. He's probably going to do it regardless of whether or not you ask him because he cares about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I think point well taken, especially given that there are like more different revenue streams is sort of where my brain always goes to it. It's like, exactly. Okay, how do we get outside of this model? Well, like, okay, why do we go to this model in the first place? It's that's where the money is coming from. Mm-hmm, that's the one that's sort of proven that people will take the risk on and give you the money to do the thing. And so, yeah, with all of these other things, let's crowdsource a musical. Let's do it.
Ken Davenport did that already.
Doesn't mean we can't do it again.
Godspell on Broadway, on the Broadway. Also, I want to preface that I, as always, and Lucy actually brought this up the other day, like, I have a deep and immense respect and appreciation for people like Anand who are doing that work because I don't have it in me. But I do believe that is a component of change that is necessary. It can't be all the Jesses of the world trying to bulldoze around the house, and it can't all be the Anands trying to work from the inside as a single person. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So if only there was a place for the Jesses and the Anands of the world to come together.
Oh my God. Slick.
Do you want to transition to AMC article?
Yeah, since we actually only have a couple minutes left, so I wanted to also just quickly, Joe, get you to give us a download on the AMC article and the captions news, because I thought that was super interesting and exciting.
Yeah, really exciting. AMC, everyone's favorite meme stock from a few whiles back. Just kidding.
From a few whiles back.
I think that's GameStop cute. Was everyone's actual favorite meme stock, yeah. But I will come back around to meme stock because I actually think it plays into this.
Oh,
but,
really?
The quick summary is that AMC is actually going to be providing captions for a mix of weekend, weekday, matinee shows on their movies to kind of gauge the demand for the services and provide a level of accessibility that's never been seen in theaters before, at least in these giant commercial. Well, I don't even know. What do you call an AMC?
It's a chain.
A chain theater? Yeah. Theater chain?
Movie chain.
Movie theater
movie
chain.
Theater chain. Yeah.
We got there.
I'm Chazzy.
I hate you. as I was hearing that news and what you said earlier when you were giving the quick summary of AMC at the top, it's like, yeah, it took the pandemic to force AMC to think about anything like this. But also this weird new life that AMC was given by all of these cuckoos on the on the Reddit.
Here it comes.
dumping their money into it.
Oh, that's interesting.
I think it that is like financially something that gave them an additional lifeblood, right? Their stock started going up. They had a better, rosier perspective on the future. And they were like, okay, what are we going to do with this money?
Gosh, which, oh man, isn't that just such like a story for, this is why like capital to start things is so important.
Ugh. Yeah. And I can't speak to anything because I have no idea, but I think like there's a connection in my head that I haven't fully figured out. So enjoy while I try.
Let us know if you do it at home.
But that like the sort of meme stockiness of what was happening on the internet and the increasing of AMC stock price was coming from like this weird cohort of internet activist-y sort of people. And did that group of people supporting this entity of AMC somehow influenced the way that they started to make business decisions outside of, you know, just the money aspect of it and the fact that their stock was rising and therefore they had a new life on capital. Yeah. But like, oh, who are the people who are doing this and what do they care about? Oh, and therefore, God, how should we as a company align ourselves for this new world, this new generation, this new set of things? So yeah, the meme stockiness of the world actually informing the way that AMC as a corporate entity is making decisions.
Right.
Like, I can't wait for that, you know, maybe like Casey Newton or someone will like write an article on that.
Ooh, is that Napkin Math person? It.
Casey Newton is, he was formerly of The Verge, covers tech and media. So this might be a little outside of his purview, but I think he's super smart and awesome.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really exciting. And you know, another little thing that I just was thinking about before we did the podcast downstairs with the AMC stuff is another friend of ours and colleague was asking about like adding, we were talking about AMC and the captioning news. And then when we got downstairs, he was like, oh, should we add captions? Do you think we can add captions to this other thing that we're working on? And I immediately started explaining, just so you know, here's the prioritization of accessibility as I understand it from our partners at Invest in Access. And it's really that like interpreters are prioritized at the if you can't do both, right? It's interpreters prioritized first. I can't ever remember exactly why, because it's all complicated and interesting and like outside of my own personal, like, you know, depth of experience. But I was saying like we very rarely will do captions only because of those best practices. But AMC, so I have all these questions about like, what is the knock-on effect of like it is point blank, full stop, awesome that AMC is putting captions on things. But we happen to know that I think it's about the audience it serves, that some you serve a wider audience with interpreters and captioners. And like, is that going to have blowback? Mm. Or is there a real actual, like, is it perform? Does it make it a little bit of performative accessibility? And I don't know the answer to that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I have all these questions now.
Oh, the takes are coming. There is going to be an article about the performative nature of putting captions on a single movie at a single theater in one city, but then getting all of this press. I don't know if that's what's actually happening, but I could see something like that.
I stand behind like the thing that we were talking about in Clubhouse today, though. It's like, I think I can solidly stand behind, just do something, get started, you know, and this feels like that for AMC and other movie theater chains.
Yeah. It made me think too, given the language that they used around like, we're testing it, we're going to see, we're going to do it for a few and see what the demand is for it. Mm. It makes me want to like show up to one of those showings.
Oh, totally.
Like, not fully game the numbers, but like, you know, if people don't know it exists, they're not going to show up. And like, how much is AMC going to push on this in terms of marketing?
Right.
If it's just a test, you know, it is getting a bunch of press, obviously.
That's good.
But a call to listeners.
Gotta go.
Go see a fully captioned AMC movie. Eternals, great option.
Yeah.
Go keep the MCU in business. They're
first,
short on money.
The first deaf actress, right, in the Marvel Universe?
Yeah, I believe so.
He was on Walking Dead and in Children of a Lesser God on Broadway a couple of years ago, right before COVID. She's fucking awesome.
Ooh, awesome.
Yeah. What an exciting freaking week in news. This is like, I mean, it's not exciting that a bunch of theater people are leaving the theater industry, but I always am for like people standing up for whatever makes them happiest. And this captioning news, even though it comes with a host of questions, just like makes me super happy.
It makes me happy too. Let's go see Eternals at one of those matinee showings.
Yeah, we have to find out where it's happening in New York.
Yeah. Hey, dear listeners. You should go see Eternals too, or any movie
you want to see it with us?
Like.
Let us know.
Yeah, tell us which AMC theater in New York is showing it. Or at the very least, just join us in the conversation. Let us know what you think about all this stuff. You can hit us up on Twitter at @BWIUnlocked. Use the hashtag TechTheaterCH and share your thoughts.
And then, of course, come be a part of our next conversation on Clubhouse Tuesday at 12:55 Eastern. Raise your hand, jump in, share your thoughts, won't you?
And if you enjoyed, this is me making fun of Jess's tone. But if you enjoyed today's episode, we would absolutely love if you could rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We want to get this in front of more people. I'm cutting Jess off so she can't sing her song.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stars. I hate you.
I didn't intentionally cut you off, but then I saw it was happening and I kept going.
I also jumped the gun, I think. I was ready. I was just very excited to sing our theme song that I've still not like settled on yet. Also, if anyone wants to write that little jingle right there, please.
Do it.
Save yourselves from me every week. Every single topic we talk about each week on Clubhouse and the podcast is inspired by the articles we read and share in our company Slack channel and the folks who join us on our stage. So please join us on Clubhouse. We're on Twitter at hashtag TechTheaterCH. And y'all, we will see you next week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.